upholding scientific research and discovery in respect, as we should, we must also be alert to the equal and opposite danger that public policy could itself become the captain of a scientific, technological elite.
We've signed a climate convention on the importance of economic instruments and free markets. Were included in this mammoth Agenda 21 document and the Rio Declaration. Now, let me be clear on one fundamental point. The United States fully intends to be the world's preeminent leader in protecting the global environment.
Coming up, Technocracy News. And greetings from Technocracy News. Patrick Wood here, editor-in-chief, and today we're going to learn about genetically engineered babies. I'm sure everybody will just be thrilled to know that genetically engineered babies are only 2 years away. Well, we'll have to leave that to find out in 2 years, looking back, but that's what scientists are saying today. I wrote at the top of this article, "Transhumanism advances in the name of preventing genetic disease, thus extending life." Universities around the world are working feverishly and largely on taxpayer money to create a future that nobody else really wants. And that is the truth. The average citizen on the street is aghast at the concept of changing the human germline at the hands of scientists who think they understand the human genome and are willing to edit away with their new genetic editing tools. This article states, "Genetically engineered designer babies could be just 2 years away and spark a revolution in editing human embryos," scientists have said. Researchers have predicted the ethical sound creation of the so-called designer babies by 2022. It is expected to spark a revolution in a new wave of genetic modification of humans. Kevin Smith from Abertay University in Dundee has published analysis that found the risk of gene editing are now low enough to warrant its use with human embryos. He argued a morally justified attempt could be less than 2 years away, and he predicted such research could kick off a revolution in producing GMO people. Dr. Smith said, quote, "The human germline is by no means perfect, with evolution having furnished us with rather minimal protection from disease that tend to strike in our later years, including cardiovascular disease, cancer, and dementia. GM techniques offer the prospect of protecting future people against these and other common disorders." He continues to quote, "This has previously been achieved to an extent in GM experiments on animals. If several common disorders could be avoided or delayed by genetically modifying humans, the average disease-free lifespan could be substantially extended." And here we have the real reason behind genetically modified humans. It's the creation of humans 2.0, which would be moving towards the elusive goal of immortality. And if you've never had any exposure to transhumanism before, just simply go to any search engine and type in transhuman or transhumanism or humanity plus, and you will find a plethora of articles and websites that openly declare the goal of transhumanism is to conquer immortality. And they intend to do that by editing the human DNA and changing the germline of humanity. The next article is slightly related to the first, and that is that globalists are openly admitting to population control agenda. This formerly has been called a conspiracy theory, wrongly so. It's never been a conspiracy theory by anybody outside of the professional world because the evidence is there. The writings are there. The audio and the video recordings of people who have promoted population control. We know that for many years, China had a one-child policy. Any children beyond that could be subject to abortion or even infanticide. I wrote at the top of this article, "Technocrats among the global elite have long called for population control to reduce the consumption of resources and to cleanse the human genome." Once regarded as a conspiracy theory, it is in plain view today. This article was penned by Brandon Smith. It starts out, "Eugenics and population control are longtime hobbies of the financial elites. In the early 1900s, the Rockefeller Foundation and the Carnegie Institute were deeply involved in promoting eugenics laws in the United States. These laws led to the forced sterilization of over 60,000 American citizens in states like California and thousands of rejected marriage licenses. The eugenics programs in the U.S. were only a beta test, though, as the Rockefellers then transferred their programs over to Germany under Hitler and the Third Reich in the 1930s, where a true widespread eugenics-based population control program was introduced. And I want to express to you a personal story on this. If this sounds outrageous to you, I am living proof of it. And allow me to tell you a short story that will demonstrate this point. My family was from Northern California, where Berkeley and San Francisco were the center of all intelligentsia. My grandmother, who was born in the mid-1890s, was fully absorbed into the eugenics movement when it came to Berkeley and when it came to Northern California. She had a child. Her first child, a son, was determined a few years later to be mentally retarded. They didn't discover that, however, until she had her second child. That would be my mother. She was not mentally retarded, but the doctors convinced my grandmother that the genetic defect that she had with her son would skip generations. So that meant that the children that my mother would have would almost certainly have genetic disorder, and it was her duty to make sure that her daughter never had children. So when my mother was 17 years old, she was taken down to a sterilization hospital in the Bay Area and sterilized. Yes, against her will, kicking and screaming, I might add. But what was done was done. And of course, as my mother was never to have children, when she got married and that realization really set in, it turned out that they adopted a child so that they could have children. That was me. I'm very fortunate to be here today, for sure, because had it not been that I was adopted into that family, who knows where I'd be today? Certainly not here speaking to you. What was really sad about this story is that in later years, when my uncle, that would be her first son, who was declared mentally incompetent, he was examined by a doctor who had a little bit more sense and found out that he wasn't mentally retarded at all. That in fact, the reason that he had a handicap was because he was deprived of oxygen at birth. The umbilical cord had been wrapped around his neck as he was delivered and cut off the oxygen to his brain and caused significant damage to it. So the whole experiment was for naught. The scientists were sure that they knew what was going on and that they had the answer, but it cost my mother everything and bitterness and angst until the day she died, I might add. This is very serious business, and I have to say, whenever I think of this story, just because of my passive involvement in it, it gives me the shivers. How can people be so mean, so cruel, and so idiotic to believe that their science can be equivalent to God to declare how people should and should not even have children? This was the nature of the eugenics movement, however, in those days. It wasn't until 1964, by the way, that the eugenics movement was completely dismantled in California. The last vestiges were gone. This article continues. The targets of population reduction were based on ethical background, but also mental intelligence and economic status. The Carnegie Institute even established a eugenics record office called Cold Springs Harbor Laboratory in 1904, which collected genetic data on millions of Americans and their families with the intent of controlling their numbers and erasing certain traits from the U.S. population. The Cold Springs Harbor Laboratory still exists today and presents itself as a kind of philanthropic endeavor to help humanity. Public knowledge of the globalists and their population control agenda was carefully swept under the rug in the U.S. after the exposure of Nazi programs post-World War II. The word eugenics became a very ugly one, and all the effort the elites put into promoting it as a legitimate science was ruined. However, they were not going to give up on their precious ideology. In the late 1960s into the 1970s, there was a resurgence of population control rhetoric coming out of the globalist circles. Under the supervision of the UN and some related scientific groups, the Club of Rome was formed. A prominent part of the Club of Rome's agenda was population reduction. In 1972, a group of scientists under the UN's direction published a paper called, quote, The Limits of Growth, By the way, you can buy that book from several places on the internet, and it's also been scanned. If you search for it, you'll likely find it very quickly. Limits to Growth, which called for greatly reducing human population in the name of saving the environment. This effort was directly linked to another agenda, the institution of a global government that could handle and enforce population controls on a wide scale. The elites had found a scientific front for the eugenics obsession, climate science. In the early 1990s, the Club of Rome published a book called The First Global Revolution. In it, they state, this is a direct quote out of this book, "In searching for a common enemy against whom we can unite, we came up with the idea that population, the threat of global warming, water shortages, famine, and the like would fit the bill. In their totality and their interactions, these phenomena do constitute a common threat which must be confronted by everyone together. But in designating these dangers as the enemy, we fall into a trap which we have already warned readers about, namely mistaking symptoms for causes. All these dangers are caused by human intervention and natural processes, and it is only through changed attitudes and behavior that they can be overcome. The real enemy is humanity itself." And if you've been listening and following Technocracy News and Trends for very long, you know that I have frequently claimed and pointed out the very anti-human nature of sustainable development, global warming, which forces the adoption of sustainable development, and so on. The article continues, "The statement comes from Chapter 5, The Vacuum, which covers their position on the need for global government. The quote is relatively clear. A common enemy must be conjured in order to trick humanity into uniting under a single banner, and the elites see environmental catastrophe caused by mankind itself as the best possible motivator. It also outlines the perfect rationale for population control. Mankind is the enemy, therefore, mankind as a species must be kept under strict supervision, and his proliferation must be restricted. The Club of Rome and the UN agenda have always been intimately connected. In the 1990s, at the same time, quote, The First Global Revolution was published, UN Secretary General Robert Mueller was publishing his manifesto, which is now collected on a website called Good Morning World. Mueller argues that global governance must be achieved using the idea of protecting the earth and environmentalism as its key component. Through fear of environmental apocalypse, the public could be convinced to accept global government as a necessary nanny state to keep society from destroying itself. In a paper titled Proper Earth Government, A Framework and Ways to Create It, Robert Mueller outlines how climate change could be used to convince the masses of the need for global government. Integral to his plans were the introduction of a new global religion and population controls. It should come as no surprise that the UN established the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, that is the IPCC, and that this panel and its offshoots are now at the forefront of the argument for population reduction. As we close in on the end date for the UN's Agenda 2030, which calls for a radical shift of human production from oil and other large-scale energy sources into small-scale renewable energies, there is only 10 years left for the globalists to achieve their goals if they hope to meet their announced deadline. This would require a violent change in human society and most of all industrialized nations. The human population would have to be reduced dramatically in order to survive on the meager energy output of renewables alone. A disaster of epic proportions would have to take place soon so that the globalists could then spend the next decade using the resulting fear to convince the surviving population that global governance is needed. Without aggressive crisis and change, most people would never go along with the UN's agenda out of simple desire for self-preservation. Even many leftists, once exposed to the true nature of carbon controls and population reduction, might have second thoughts when they realize they could be affected. The key to understanding people who cheer for population control or population reduction is that these people always assume that they will be the survivors and inheritors of the earth after the culling. They never assume that they will be the ones put on the chopping block. In 2019, the population agenda is being ramped into high gear, and the public is being carefully conditioned over time to accept the idea that man-made climate change is real and population is the source of the problem. Recently, a group of scientists, partially funded by something called the Worthy Garden Club, claimed 11,000 signatures on a statement for the need for population reduction in the name of saving the Earth from global warming. The statement cites all the same long-debunked IPCC and UN climate change propaganda as the reasons why the Earth is on the verge of annihilation. The fact of the matter is, climate scientists have been consistently caught red-handed manipulating their own data to show the intended outcome of global warming. They have even been caught trying to adjust their own data from 20 years ago in order to match it more closely to the rigged data they publish today. The Worthy Garden Club is a strangely sterile group, and there doesn't seem to be any list of the patrons who funds them. However, the mainstream media was quick to pick up on the statement from the 11,000 scientists and tie it to the statements made by the UN's IPCC. Population control has also been brought up consistently as an issue in the 2020 presidential election race. Bernie Sanders argued for birth control measures in poor countries. Elizabeth Warren promoted abortion by saying it was as safe as getting your tonsils removed. She has consistently promoted the carbon control agenda of the UN and was, interestingly, a member of the University of Texas Population Research Center in the 1980s. And Green New Deal politicians are throwing their support behind the statements from the Worthy Garden Club on population reduction. This is the first time I have seen the argument for population reduction used so blatantly and widespread in the mainstream media, and it suggests to me that a trend is forming. For years, I have warned my readers that they will know when the globalists are about to pull the plug on the current system when they start talking about their criminality openly. When they admit to their agenda in a free way, it means they are close to a global reset and do not care anymore about who knows it. The openness of the plan to cut world population is becoming apparent. Strangely, there has been little mention of the fact that the world population, the West most of all, is actually in decline already. Far from exploding beyond the Earth's capacity, people are barely having enough children to keep the current population stable. It would appear that the globalist agenda is already in motion. Through engineered economic destruction, the population is being slowly reduced. However, this slow decline may not be enough to satisfy the globalists. How many people would the globalists like to kill off to achieve their utopian aspirations? Well, globalist Ted Turner, in a moment of honesty, said when confronted by We Are Change that the population should be reduced to 2 billion, down from 7 billion. That's right, Ted Turner, the movie magnate. I highly recommend that you read all of this article word for word again, even take some notes. This has never, ever been a conspiracy theory. The global elite has been very open in declaring its plans along the way. It's just that nobody else ever believed them. And now we're up against it, face to face, head to head. The last article presents a brand new concept. My title on it is Private Consortium Launches Smart Region to Slam Smart City Technology. It was hard to write a title for this because it's such a broad topic of what's going on here in Phoenix, Arizona. The Phoenix area happens to house Arizona State University in Tempe. They claim that they are the most sustainable university in the nation, if not the world, and every department within the university has been converted into a sustainable education model. They have a school of sustainability, a four-story building that sits in the middle of campus, where you can attend and achieve up to a PhD in sustainability. I wrote at the top of this article, Arizona State University President Michael Crow has created an unconstitutional consortium of organizations to impose smart city technology across 20 cities and 4.4 million people in central Arizona. This is a global first, and other regionalists around the world are watching like hawks to see if they can pull it off. If they do, it will instantly become the global template to create smart cities without public intervention. Before I read you some of this article, which actually is a press release from Cox Communications, they're involved in this, of course, I want to point out that all the cities in the Phoenix area all have city councils who were duly elected by the citizens of those towns. The problem with rolling out smart city technology across a region like this is, of course, It's very frustrating for those rolling it out to have to go deal with all those pesky little city councils out there. They look at them mostly as a bunch of ignorant buffoons who don't understand the technology they're trying to bring to them. So they figure the best way to do it is just to create a policy and slam it all over the region and basically force them to accept it. The problem is, of course, the city councils have nothing to say about it. In many cases, they're not even going to know it's happening. Well, regional governance is anti-constitution. It's unconstitutional. The U.S. Constitution requires the federal government to ensure that all states in the union have a republic form of government. This is not a republic form of government. This is a Soviet-style government where everything is controlled on a regional basis rather than on a city basis or a county basis. So this article states, Cox Communications and ASU announced at the 2019 ASU Smart Region Summit flagship event their partnership to create the Cox Connected Environments Collaboratory at ASU. This collaboration will drive the development of Arizona's smart region infrastructure, delivering on the promise of ASU's Smart City Cloud Innovation Center to build smarter communities in the greater Phoenix metropolitan region by solving pressing community challenges. The Cox Connected Environments Collaboratory at ASU will aim to solve real challenges within the greater Phoenix community and beyond in ways that are innovative and not readily available to the marketplace today. As an incubation center and convening space, the collaboratory aims to engage ASU students, staff, and faculty to design the next wave of Internet of Things solutions that could, for example, optimize buildings for sustainability, provide new learning experiences in virtual and augmented reality, overhaul transportation infrastructure, and more. Cox will deploy a comprehensive wired and wireless network on campus as part of ASU's NextGen network. The collaboratory is another step forward in these efforts, engaging city leaders and citizens, nonprofits, faculty, student researchers, industry experts, and visiting scholars to bring the metropolis and regional infrastructure of the future. As a time out here, I want to point out that they mentioned citizens. I was fortunate to have been able to attend the afternoon session on Friday of this particular summit. That is the ASU Smart Region Summit. They had an event last week that lasted all 5 days. It was wrapped up with a special meeting at the end that was open to the public. There's probably 250 people there at most. Many of those were staff and students, etc. And they made the comment along the way that everything they're doing is in response to citizen involvement. And yet, I see no place that citizens have been involved in this process whatsoever. The fact that I attended, I believe I was an anomaly. I didn't see a whole lot of other citizens there that were just there to find out what's going on. And all of the people who were there, all they could talk about was data, Internet of Things, making apps for society to achieve social engineering of their targets. This article continues, Cox is a trusted partner, and we're eager to see Cox Connected Environments Collaboratory at ASU drive smart region applications that combine people, connected devices, data, and processes to improve community operations and the citizen experience. Cox currently powers several smart city initiatives and communities today as the preferred data network of residents and business owners, said Steve Rowley, Executive VP of Cox Business. Cox Business, combined with Cox 2M, will bring new experiential capabilities to the campus and provide a space for all to innovate. Through our Cox 2M business line, we will bring ASU students, staff, and faculty the tools and capabilities to develop end-to-end solutions that can really make a difference. We are excited to bring the future together in this new collaborative environment. As a founding partner of the Connective, the Greater Phoenix Smart Region Consortium, Cox will also work with ASU to utilize the power of Cox's existing gigabit network and continue to extend its fiber infrastructure through aggressive investment to create a more connected region. The Cox Connected Environments Collaboratory will reside in an innovation zone at ASU. That is, spaces located across the valley and ASU campuses that are dedicated to creating innovative solutions to global challenges. These zones include SkySong ASU Research Park, Novus Innovation Corridor, and more, actively engaging schools, faculty, students, programs, and initiatives. I want to point out here that these innovation zones, as they're called, are simply designated throughout the community, and then companies are invited to come in and set up experimental operations. Come invent new stuff, they say. Innovate. Be creative. And by the way, you have a built-in population that you can test your innovations on. And if it's successful, why then we can roll it out to the entire region. In essence, this means that every citizen within these zones is being turned into an unsuspecting guinea pig. They will be the subject of tests and experiments over which they have no control whatsoever. And I might add again, this entire collaboration has no elected representatives in it whatsoever. The article continues, "The spirit of innovation permeates everything we do here at ASU, and that philosophy extends to the ecosystems and resources we make available to our collaborators." Executive Vice President of the Knowledge Enterprise and Chief Research and Innovation Officer at ASU. "New ideas and solutions to grand challenges are discovered when we partner at this level. Our innovation centers and innovation zones are prime examples of how these relationships are cultivated and how the resulting benefits are realized by our communities." Now, let me point out in closing that people across our nation are watching ASU right now and what they're doing out here. I've seen articles from other parts of the country saying as much. In fact, there are countries in Europe watching what's going on at ASU right now to see if this particular initiative is going to be successful and how far they can get with it before the citizens of our community take up pitchforks and torches and mount a protest against this. That needs to happen, by the way. This is absolutely outrageous that a group of essentially private citizens could stand up and say, "We're going to tell all the rest of you how to live." Well, this is actually just the attitude that the global elite has had for years, isn't it? And now we see it in a microcosm in Phoenix, Arizona. Well, if they get away with it here, it's coming to your area soon. Be looking for it. It'll be called Smart Region Initiative or something of that nature. And when you see it occur, you ought to jump on it right away because the same thing's going to happen there that's happening here right now. Well, I'm Patrick Wood for Technocracy News and Trends. Catch you next time.